This is Laurence Olivier. Today's play has been adapted from a story by Oscar Wilde. It is a little comedy. It was, of course, written many years ago, and my friends in America will, I'm sure, accept the jest in the spirit in which it was written. I myself will play the ghost in Oscar Wilde's The Canterville Ghost.
Allow me to introduce myself. I am the Canterville Ghost. The ghost of Sir Simon de Canterville, who murdered his wife, the Lady Eleanora de Canterville, here, in this very room, close on 400 years ago. Through 13 English reigns, I had haunted the halls and corridors of Canterville Chase, and from generation to generation, I had struck terror into the hearts of the English nobility. Lords had been driven out of their minds by me. Ladies had died of fright. My career had been brilliant and uninterrupted. At last, I had been almost too successful. No more tenants for Canterville Chase could be found. I had only the housekeeper to frighten. And then, one day, in 1888, the shutters were flung back again. Canterville Chase found a new tenant.
Well, Mr. Otis, I'm glad you like the old place. Quite a few hundred years of history have gone to the making of Canterville. My ancestors have lived here since the days of Richard Coeur de Lion.
Is that right?
Yes.
I see. Wouldn't that be about the time of Columbus, Lord Canterville?
300 years before Columbus, Mr. Otis.
Well, what do you know about that? Do you hear that, Mama? 300 years before Columbus. Hey, you sure have plenty of history over here in the old country.
You sure have to lay on plenty of plumbing.
Yes, I guess that's right, too. Now, well, sir, this is just the sort of place I've been looking for, plumbing or no plumbing. We'll take it.
Well, Mr. Otis, there is just one thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's only fair to warn you about it. I mean the Canterville ghost.
What? You mean you have a ghost as well?
Yes, I'm afraid so.
Well?
My grand aunt, the Dowager Duchess of Bolton, was frightened into a fit by it as she was dressing for dinner. Two skeleton hands on her shoulders as she was dressing for dinner. Well, she never really recovered.
No kidding.
Well, I'm afraid not. No. Several members of my family have seen it, as well as the rector of the parish, Reverend Augustus Dampier. He's a fellow of King's College, Cambridge.
Massachusetts?
No, madam. England. Since then, to tell the truth, we haven't cared to live in the place ourselves. None of our younger servants would stay. There are mysterious noises in the corridors and here in the library. Mrs. Umney here will bear me out.
Horrible noises, sir, groans, and horrible ghostly laughter.
Well, Lord Canterville, I'll take the furniture and the ghost and a valuation, eh? Now, I come from a modern country where we have everything that money can buy, and I reckon that if there were such a thing as a genuine ghost in Europe, we'd have it at home in one of our public museums, or in a roadshow by now, yes.
Well, I fear that the ghost exists, Mr. Otis. It's been well known for centuries, since 1584, in fact. It always makes its appearance before the death of a member of the family.
Well, so does the family doctor, for that matter. But, sir, there's no such thing as a ghost. And I guess the laws of nature are not going to be suspended for the British aristocracy.
Lord's sake, what was that, Hiram?
Oh, one of the kids, Mama, trying to throw a scare into you. They're out back there in the lobby, I guess.
Well, right here, Pop. Hmm? We didn't do nothing on us, Pop.
Eh? Well, you're not scaring me any, son. Where's Virginia?
Out in the garden, Pop.
Well, okay, then. So it was a ghost. Now, come along. You run along and play while I talk business with Lord Canterville here.
Say, Mom, look at this red stain on the floorboards here.
Where? Why, yes, indeed. I'm afraid something must have been spilt here.
Yes, madam. Blood has been spilt on that spot.
But how horrid. I don't at all care for blood stains in the living room. It must be removed at once.
It's the blood of Lady Eleanor de Canterville, madam, who was murdered on that very spot by her husband in 1575. Sir Simon de Canterville, that was. Oh, begging your pardon, my lord.
Yes, well, Sir Simon survived her 9 years and disappeared suddenly under very mysterious circumstances.
Indeed.
Yes, his body's never been discovered, Miss Mank.
You have never cleaned up the mess?
Sir Simon's spirit still haunts the chase, sir. The bloodstains have been much admired by tourists and others and cannot be removed. Yes.
Eh? Well, why, that's all nonsense. Pinkerton's Champion Stain Remover and Paragon Detergent will clean it up in no time. And you should always have a bottle handy like I do. You see. Now, just watch this, eh? And then. There you are. I knew Pinkerton would do it, eh? There you are. No stain left at all.
Sir, he did not have done that, sir. It isn't right, sir.
Well, I really must be going, Mr. Otis. Goodbye.
Yes, Canterville Chase had some new tenants at last. And as the Americans would say, my business was looking up again. All my greatest successes came back to me again. The Dowager Duchess, Madame de Tremouillac, who had seen me reading her diary by the firelight. The beautiful Lady Stutfield, who wore a black velvet band round her throat to hide the burning mark of my skeleton fingers. She drowned herself at last in the carp pond at the end of the King's Walk. Yes, indeed. New tenants were here, and every morning I had a surprise for them.
Hey, Pop! That stain's back on the floor again, Pop, just like it's been every morning.
Eh? Well, son, that's mighty queer. Mighty queer. Darn it, you know, I've locked this room every night. And every morning the stain's back there on the floor, just like we never rubbed it out each time.
You know something, Pop? It's a different color again.
Eh? Why, now that's queer too, son. First dark red, then scarlet, then sort of purple.
See what it is today, Pop? It's bright green.
For the heaven's sake, who ever heard of green blood?
Well, that's right, Mom. Hey, this is getting monotonous. Well, it's lucky we still have a lot more bottles of Pinkerton's. So here we go again.
That very night, I made my first appearance. I chose my role very carefully. Mad Matthew, the starveling ghoul, with eyes like burning coals, long gray hair falling over my shoulders in matted coils, my garments of an antique cut, soiled and ragged and phosphorescent. From my wrists and ankles hung heavy manacles and rusty gyves. And then, dragging my chains along the cold stone floor, I made for the corridor outside the American's bedroom.
Hiram, there's someone out there in the corridor.
Now, this is too much. Now, see here. Look, my dear sir. Those chains of yours are making a terrible noise, and it's past 1 o'clock. Mrs. Otis and I can't get any sleep. Now, I really must insist on your oiling them. Now, look here. I brought you for that purpose a small bottle of the Tammany Rising Sun Lubricator. Now, it's said to be completely efficacious upon one application, and there are several testimonials to that effect on the wrapper from some of our most eminent native divines. Now, I'll leave it here for you by the bedroom candles, and I'll be happy to supply you with more should you require it. Now, good night, sir. Now, see here, sir.
Elmer, what are you thinking of? Shine pillars at the ghost. You've broken a picture, and he's dropped his bottle of Rising Sun Lubricator. Get back to bed at once.
Oh, never in 300 years had I been so grossly insulted. As there was evidently no time to lose before further indignities, I adopted the fourth dimension and retired through the wainscoting. On reaching my secret chamber in the left wing, I leaned up against a moonbeam to recover my breath. I, who had made a butler shoot himself in the pantry merely by tapping on a window pane with a green hand, I, given a bottle of Rising Sun Lubricator and having a pillow shied at my head. Very well, we would see. Next Sunday evening, the Kenilworth Spectre, in full suit of armor.
Say, what's going on out there? Hey, put up your hands there. Come on, I've got you covered.
Oh, my shin.
Say, stop. He's been trying on that little old suit of armor, and he's fallen over the halberd.
Well, quick, boy, get me the liniment. Dr. Dobles.
Are you all right now? For heaven's sake, it must be something internal. Now, you try some of this tincture. If it's indigestion, it'll cure it as quick as quick.
On reaching my room, I entirely broke down and became a prey to the most violent agitation. The vulgarity of these Americans, their utter materialism, was almost more than I could bear. I had hoped that even modern Americans would have been affected by a spectre in armor, if only out of respect for their national poet Longfellow, which I myself had the highest respect for. If only I hadn't fallen over. Well, I would terrify them before I'd finished. I would make them run screaming before me on the one night of the year when they must be afraid of ghosts on Halloween.
Elmer, what have you been doing all this afternoon?
Nothing, Virginia. Why?
You've been up to something, I know.
Honest, Virginia, I didn't do anything.
Well, all right then. Come on down to the kitchen. Mom has a big pail of Halloween apples for us to bob for.
Okay, I'm coming.
This Halloween, they will see a sight that would freeze the blood in their veins. A green, ice-cold corpse that crawled before them with white bleached bones and one rolling eyeball. I was to play my favorite role, Dumb Daniel, or the Suicide Skeleton. Making my way silently down the corridor, I followed them towards the stairs. No, they would expect me to appear at the head of the stairs. This way, then, round this corner, where... It's a ghost!
What's the matter? What is it? I'll be doggone. Well, look at that. Did you rig this up, son?
Yeah, Pop.
Well, now that's mighty smart. A real Halloween ghost of your own, eh?
Sure, Pop.
A
sure
pumpkin thing. Head with a candle in it and a bed quilt on a broomstick. Well, what do you know? What's this notice say here?
Read it, Pop.
Oldie Otis Ghosty,
ye
only true and originally spook. Well, now that's mighty smart work, son.
Well, it sure scared the pants off the Canterville ghost, Pop.
I guess you can say that again, son. He sure did yell, didn't he?
Tricked, fooled, outwitted.
In a moment, we continue Theatre Royal with Sir Laurence Olivier.
We'd like to remind you of the great listening entertainment in store tomorrow on NBC. When the noted Italian maestro Guido Cantelli leads the world-famous NBC Symphony in another brilliant concert from Carnegie Hall. The famed conductor offers the works of Handel and Schubert, featuring the latter's Symphony No. 7 in C major. Later Sunday, NBC invites you to hear a special resume of the year's history-making news on Voices and Events, 1953. You'll hear the voices of such world figures as Eisenhower, Churchill, and Stalin as top NBC commentators bring you news highlights of the year on Voices and Events, 1953. And remember to join NBC's Sunday Newspaper of the Air, Weekend, the only paper you can safely enjoy while driving in your car. Top notables from the news and entertainment world join to bring you all the news of the week in review, along with feature items on home, fashion, and sports. You'll meet Merrill Muller, Elmo Roper, and Earl Godwin with commentary on local and world news highlights, while Earl Wilson covers the Broadway beat, and Mel Allen reports on what's new in sports. And there's a special feature in store on NBC Star Playhouse tomorrow when film star Margaret O'Brien portrays the title role in the whimsical Lewis Carroll tale, Alice in Wonderland. Later, enjoy the make-believe tale, A Stroke of Fate, a special historical series that shows how a single event may have altered the entire course of a nation. Try to imagine what might have happened if the famous Battle of Hastings had not succeeded during that all-important Norman conquest of England. That stroke of fate, part of your fine listening entertainment tomorrow on NBC.
And now we continue Theatre Royal with Sir Laurence Olivier.
On the day of All Hallows, I must admit that I was very weak and tired. The terrible excitement of the last 4 weeks was beginning to have its effect. My nerves were completely shattered, and I started at the slightest noise. For 5 days I kept to my room, and at last made up my mind to give way over the bloodstain on the library floor. If the Otis family did not want it, they clearly did not deserve it. The question of my appearances was another matter, and really not under my control. As I saw it, it was my solemn duty to appear in the corridors once a week, and to gibber from the large oriel window on the first and third Wednesday in every month. I could not honorably escape from the obligations. I determined on one last fling. Intolerable. Wishing to make an effective entrance, I had flung the wretched child's bedroom door wide open when a heavy jug of water fell down on me, drenching me till my teeth chattered, or would have done if I had been wearing them. Luckily, I had not brought my head with me, or the consequences might have been very serious. As it was, I suffered a severe shock to my nervous system and was laid up for the next few days with a very bad cold.
That poor ghost. It's gotten an awful cold.
He sure has, Bob.
I think you're downright mean, Elmer. Fixing booby traps on the bedroom door.
That's right, Virginia. Just think if I'd been the one the water fell on.
His mum's got something there, Elmer.
Yes, Pop.
Well, I'm going right upstairs and leave it a bottle of Dr. Smedwick's Ever Ready Cold Cure before we've all gone and caught it.
It was useless. I gave up all hope of ever frightening this rude American family. From then on, I had to content myself with creeping about the passage in borrowed slippers with a muffler round my throat on account of the drafts. I also thought it advisable to carry a small arquebus in case I should be attacked by the boy. Many a time, as I happen to know, he lay in wait for me, the corridors and stairs bestrewn with nutshells. But in deference to my self-respect, I positively refused to appear. At last, when I did appear or materialize, I took good care to do so in private, merely to stretch my legs, as I did one sunny morning in the tapestry chamber.
Poor Mr. Ghost. Sir Simon, you look so sad.
Who wouldn't be a little depressed the way I have been treated?
I know. But my young brother, that's Elmer, he's going to school soon, to Eton.
To Eton? But that's my old school.
Well, he's going anyhow, and then nobody will bother you, if you behave yourself.
It is absurd asking me to behave myself, quite absurd. After all, I am the Canterville Ghost. I must rattle my chains occasionally and groan through keyholes and walk about at night, if that's what you mean. It's my only reason for existing at all.
It's no reason at all for existing, and you know you've been very wicked. Mrs. Umney told us the first day we arrived here that you had killed your wife.
That I admit. It was purely a family matter and concerned no one else.
But it's very wrong to kill anyone. You know it is.
Oh, how I hate the cheap severity of abstract ethics. My wife was very plain, never had my ruffs properly starched, and knew nothing about cookery. Why, there was a buck I had shot in Hogley Woods, a magnificent pricket. And you know how she sent it up to table? Oh, well, it doesn't matter now, I suppose. It's all over. And I don't think it was very nice of her brothers to starve me to death, even though I did kill her.
Starve you to death?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Mr. Ghost, Sir Simon, are you hungry? Is that why you groan so much?
Oh, no.
Look, I have a sandwich in my case. Would you like
it? No, thank you. I never eat anything now. It is very kind of you, all the same. And you're much nicer than the rest of your horrid, rude, vulgar, dishonest family.
Stop it. It's you who are rude and horrid and vulgar. And as for dishonesty, you know you stole the paints out of my box to try and furbish up that ridiculous bloodstain in the library.
Yes, but what was I to do? It's a very difficult thing to get real blood nowadays, and your father began it all with his Paragon detergent. I certainly don't see why I shouldn't have taken your paints in the circumstances. As for colour, that's a matter of taste. The Cantervilles actually have blue blood, the very bluest in England. Of course, I know you Americans don't care for things of that kind.
You know nothing about it. And the best thing you can do is to emigrate and improve your mind.
Emigrate? What? To America?
Yes.
I don't think I should like America. Really, I don't.
I suppose because we have no ruins and no curiosities.
No curiosities? You have your manners.
Good evening. I will go and call my brother.
No, please don't go, Miss Virginia. I'm so lonely and so unhappy. And I really don't know what to do. I want to go to sleep, but I can't.
That's quite absurd. You've merely to go to bed and blow out the candle. Oh. It is very difficult sometimes to keep awake, especially in church. But there's no difficulty at all about sleeping. Why, even babies know how to do that, and they're not very clever.
I have not slept for 300 years. For 300 years, I haven't slept a wink. And I'm so tired.
Poor, poor ghost. Have you no place where you can sleep?
Far away beyond the pine woods, there is a little garden. There the grass grows long and deep. There are the great white stars of the hemlock flower. And the nightingale sings all night long. All night long he sings, and the cold crystal moon looks down. And the yew tree spreads out its giant arms over the sleepers.
You mean the churchyard, the garden of death?
Yes. Death must be so beautiful, to lie in the soft brown earth with the grasses waving above one's head and listen to silence. To have no yesterday and no tomorrow. To forget time. To forgive life. To be at peace. You can help me. You can open for me the portals of death's house, for love is always with you, and love is stronger than death is.
But how? Tell me how.
Have you ever read the old prophecy on the library window?
Oh, often. I know it quite well.
Mm-hmm.
It's painted in curious black letters, and it's ever so difficult to read. There are 6 lines, aren't
yes,
there?
Yes. Do you remember them?
I think so. When a golden girl can win prayer from out the lips of sin, when the barren almond bears and a little child gives way its tears, then shall all the house be still and peace come to Canterville. But I don't know what they mean.
They mean that you must weep for me for my sins, because I have no tears, and pray with me for my soul, because I have no faith. And then if you have always been sweet and good and gentle, the angel of death will have mercy on me. You will see fearful shapes in darkness, and wicked voices will whisper in your ear, but they will not harm you. For against the purity of a girl, the powers of hell cannot prevail.
I am not afraid, and I will ask the angel to have mercy on you.
Virginia, have no fear. Come through the wainscoting with me. Quickly, quickly, or it will be too late.
Don't take on, Sam, madam. I'm sure Miss Virginia's all right.
But how can you say that? It's 11 o'clock. It's nearly 6 hours since anyone saw her. Poor, poor little Virginia. Oh, Hiram, is there any news of her?
No, Mom, I'm afraid not. We've combed every inch of the grounds. Half the village has been in to help us. We've been down to the depot. She didn't take the evening train. She's just vanished.
Oh, whatever shall we do? What can have happened to her?
She isn't in the cart pond, Mom. They've dragged it.
Now, quiet, son, now. Don't frighten your mother.
Oh.
Now, the first thing in the morning, I'm going to telegraph for Scotland Yard. I'll have a posse detective set up to comb the entire district. Now, don't worry more than you have to, Mom. She's probably just got lost in the woods picking flowers or something like that. Well, there goes midnight. I guess we'll just have to turn in for the night. No use our sitting up any longer. Come along, honey, now. Don't cry. Virginia!
Good heavens, child. Where have you been? We've been looking everywhere for you. All over the countryside. Where have you been?
Now, look here, Virginia. Your poor mother has been frightened to death. Now, where on earth have you been? You must never play these practical jokes again.
I've been with the ghost.
What?
He's dead, and you must come and see him. He's back here, in a secret room behind the wall. Here. Come with me, all of you. Come with me. There's nothing to be afraid of anymore.
Gosh, a secret passage.
There is the ghost. Or rather, there is his body. Where he died 300 years ago.
Gosh, a skeleton chained to the wall.
This is where his brothers-in-law starved him to death because he had been very wicked and murdered their sister. But he was very sorry for what he had done. And after he lay down, I stayed with him till he fell asleep at last. And he left me this box of beautiful jewels before he finally died.
Hmm? Well, what do you know? Those must be worth 10 grand.
I prayed for him, like he begged me to do. Poor Sir Simon. Poor, poor ghost.
Hey, Pop! Look out of this grating here. You know that withered old almond tree in the courtyard?
Yeah?
Well, it's all covered with blossom. I can see it quite clear in the moonlight.
Then his soul is at rest. God has forgiven him.
This is Laurence Olivier again. I should like to extend my thanks to the cast of this week's program, who included MacDonald Park, Francis Highland, Howard Marion Crawford, Thelma Ruby, Natalie Benish, and Lois McLean. I shall be back with you again next week when I look forward to the pleasure of both introducing the play and appearing in it myself. Until then, au revoir, and thank you.
Sir Laurence Olivier starred in today's transcribed program. The script was by Derek Patmore. The music was under the direction of Sidney Torch. Theatre Royal is an NBC presentation, produced and directed by Harry Allen Towers.
Tonight, hear Hollywood Story on the NBC Radio Network.